it's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? On dope?
Where you can toke.
I inhale frequently.
Or you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can toke and talk.
10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
While we talk about toke on Toker Talk Radio.
So by the way, when it comes to pot, you know, if you're 40 years old, you live in a log cabin in Oregon, you got 12 giant pot plants in your backyard, have a ball.
Live from beautiful Portland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios.
Cannabis.
Plus your calls live at 971-533-7111.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
Holland, is it real? Don't tease me.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years.
And now, here's your host, the guru of ganja graphics, the sultan of sativa statistics, and the worst nightmare of a reefer mad prohibitionist. A polite, perspicacious, productive pothead with a propensity for PowerPoint. Radical Russ Belville.
Thank you, tokers and tokettes and non-token lovers of liberty. Radical Russ back here in beautiful legal Potland, Oregon for hour two, Toker Talk Radio. I was just reading over the chat room, so I need to get my head in the right space. Give me just a second here. Oh, much better. Yeah, we needed that. Today's bud was grown by TJ's Organic Gardens. It is a hybrid variety, TJ's Chocolate Kush, with 17.8% THC and less than 0.1 CBD. An uplifted, euphoric, and happy bud brought to you by TJ's Organic Gardens. And yeah, by the way, if you're out there listening and you're a grower, you're a dispensary, and you want me smoking your bud on air and telling people how it made me feel, we can arrange that. Just get a hold of me. I'm Radical Russ everywhere. Find me on Gmail, radicalruss@gmail.com. But I had to take a puff because there was a little dust up. There was a little tiff in the chat room. We got a chat room here at cannabisradio.com, and it's mostly populated by people named John. In fact, anybody named John gets into the chat room absolutely free. Of course, everybody gets in the chat room absolutely free, but if you're named John, you can join absolutely free. Sometimes it feels like the census from the Buckaroo Banzai movie. You know, John Yaya's, John Smallberries, John Big Booty, Big Booty. But anyway, I get off the track. In the first hour, I was talking about how there was this huge energy footprint, you know, from indoor marijuana growing and how that's a problem. We need to solve that. And one of the Johns in the chat room said, whenever someone brings that up, I ask about the environmental footprint of golf courses. And another John took that to be a repudiation of my argument about the indoor marijuana grows. And I didn't see it that way. Here's the way I see it. Okay. Like, it's kind of like, you know, when we talk about whether or not you can call someone pothead, it's like, yeah, you and I, we can call each other potheads, but the mainstream better not call us potheads, right? So here's my take on it. When we're talking out public with the mainstream public, the mainstream public goes, oh my God, marijuana growing takes up so much water and California's in a drought. My instinct is to go, yeah, but look at almonds. And then when they say, oh my God, marijuana growing takes up so much power, there's an instinct to go, yeah, but look at golf courses and how much environmental footprint they take, right? That's not to say that we shouldn't, between ourselves, start to go, hey, you know what? We ought to reduce our water use and our environmental footprint and our energy use. You can have both feelings, right? You can have the feeling of, hey, don't pick on us because we're marijuana. Before you start, you know, pointing out the speck in our eye with respect to water and power, you got to look at the log in your own eye on water and power. So I understand that. You can feel that and also feel that we ought to reduce our power and our water consumption. So it's not, I didn't see it as a contradictory or an attack or anything. I saw it as kind of an adjunct, kind of a, it goes kind of along the same lines. Yes, we need to be responsible in looking at how we use our water and electricity, but we shouldn't be the only ones. The whole, everybody else got to be taking a look at what they're doing too, especially if they want to come down harder on us than they want to come down on any of these other industries. I understand both sides. I want to thank the Johns for having that little discussion because it got me to bring this up. Anyway, stay tuned. When we come back for break, we're going to talk about the near fatal K2 overdose in legal Washington state. What's up with that?
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Seed to sale, clicks to conversions, and more. You're listening to the Cannabis Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Montel Williams. Most of you know me as a talk show host, but I'm also an author, actor, single father of four, avid snowboarder, and I'm also a medical marijuana patient. Living with multiple sclerosis, I'm in pain every day. Medical marijuana is my last resort, and it helps me when all other drugs have failed. If you'd like more information about medical marijuana, you can contact the Marijuana Policy Project at mpp.org or call 1-877-JOIN-MPP.
Chronicling the latest cannabis industry news and headlines.
Well, with four states with tax and regulate and the District of Columbia.
The state of cannabis.
Oh, my God, it's refreshing. We have people that generally wouldn't speak on behalf of cannabis for fear of retribution, fear of losing your practices, fear of many of those things, and find ourselves in a place that we finally can.
Bringing you fact-based news and views and keeping listeners on the pulse of what's happening in the industry today. The State of Cannabis. On demand anytime, only on CannabisRadio.com.
This is the Russ Belville Show, annoying Kevin Sabet since 2012.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Remember, friends, there's more to life than marijuana. Dyke. Just can't remember what it is. Why'd I come in here? This is the Rush Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Getting close to 9 after the hour, and I gotta put on my curmudgeon hat for a second. Tell you kids to get off my lawn and pull up your pants, because this Pokemon Go stuff... like, I don't even... I can't even. A couple of stories on this Pokemon Go thing, real quick. Out of K2 News, right here in the Portland, Oregon area... Out of Forest Grove, which is just a bit west of where I'm at right now, a man accused of breaking into a shed last week left a telling note. The break-in was reported at a Forest Grove storage shed last week. Police tell K2 News the suspect left behind a note on a whiteboard saying, "I broke in for the Pokemon." People are breaking into people's garages, storage sheds, to chase after... electronic phantoms. Okay, so now we got breaking and entering for Pokemon. What else do we got? Oh, yes, this one, a tweet coming from Como News. A 26-year-old or 28-year-old driver was cited for causing a collision because he admitted to being distracted by the Pokemon Go app. This is the first distracted driving collision reported to the Washington State Patrol since the mobile app launched earlier this month. Yeah, so nobody suffered any injuries, unfortunately. Fortunately, I mean, not unfortunately, I mean fortunately, the driver was headed eastbound, traveling the posted speed limit when he collided into the rear of a newer Chevy sedan. The female driver of the Chevy had stopped in the roadway and was attempting to make a left turn when her car was hit. And the driver of the Honda admitted to being distracted by focusing on his Pokemon Go app. All right, so already Pokemon Go is more harmful than marijuana. There's been some deaths from this, hasn't there? I saw a video also of a stampede in Central Park in New York. A whole bunch of people running to this particular spot in Central Park where a really rare Pokemon was. This is just chaotic and crazy. And there's a new movie out too called Nerve that's supposedly like this. It's like Pokemon Go on steroids, where the kids are entrapped into this world of playing these dangerous games in real life and so forth. Man, it's just getting crazy out there. I like the meme that's going around, though, that says the original Pokemon Go was a bag of mushrooms. You know, when we wanted to get outside and look at things that weren't there, we did it the old-fashioned way. We took a big old bag of shrooms. I guess. Whatever floats your boat. But I'm telling you, this Pokemon Go thing going to cause some problems. Anyway, let's get back to the marijuana story, because I found that on Como News, because Como News up in Washington State had this story coming out of Shelton, Washington, where a young man, how old is he here? How old is this kid? Shelton Mann, but doesn't say how old he is. I wish I knew. But it says J.J. Tomlinson spent 4 days in a medically induced coma after smoking K2. He says, quote, "I just remember taking a puff and then black and then waking up in a hospital, and apparently 3 days had gone by," end quote. So this is July 7th. He nearly died. His mom said, quote, "The doctor said that if my family wasn't there, that he would have died on my living room floor. One hit and he would have died," end quote. Now, K2 and Spice are banned in Washington State, but new versions keep showing up because I've told this story before. You have to ban a particular chemical. These synthetic cannabinoids, as they are chemicals that are just tweaked a little bit from one version to the next. And so it's just a matter of another tweak. And it's an almost infinite amount of tweaks you can make to come up with a different chemical. But each time you do, you're coming up with something that's untested and something that's far more powerful than the phytocannabinoids we might get to smoke or eat sometimes. The aunt, Sarah, says, quote, "He almost died. We've got to ban it altogether." But it is banned altogether. It's completely banned. Now, what they're saying is we need to ban all the look-alike drugs, anything that could possibly be like K2. And you could try that. You could try to come up with some wide-open-ended language that allows them to ban anything that mimics the effect of marijuana. And you could try. It's not going to have any different effect. The Washington Poison Control Center, there's been 17 cases. And they say, and here's the telling quote from the news story, folks. Here's the gist. Underline this and mark it with your yellow highlighter. "A real concern is even though this is a legal marijuana state, the synthetic cannabis doesn't show up in your analysis, so it's a dangerous alternative for those who get tested for their work." Yeah. It doesn't matter if you ban the synthetic cannabinoids altogether. It doesn't matter how much more you police them. You're attacking the wrong side of the problem. You're attacking the supply side instead of attacking the demand side. Why in the hell would there be a demand for synthetic cannabis in a state where regular cannabis is legal? Where regular herbal cannabis that has never killed anyone in 7,000 years is legal? Why would someone smoke an untested synthetic version that can kill them in one hit? Because there's a drug test. And this is why I have been railing against drug testing ever since I started this show. It's the whole reason I have this show. I'd still be in a posh cubicle job with a big salary and a nice healthcare package, with no worries in the world, living in legal Oregon and just enjoying myself, had it not been for a drug test that told me that I wasn't fit for the work I was doing. that my, the powers of my brain were nothing compared to the metabolites of cannabis in my armpit hair. And when these people want to say that drug testing is for public safety, we drug test to make sure that there's public safety, that people aren't high at work, that people aren't high, you know, flying the plane or conducting the train. They ignore the public harms that are caused when people try to avoid getting busted for drug testing. They ignore the public harm in the alternative drugs that people take. And not just the synthetic pot. People will switch to using dextromethorphan. You know, get some scissorup in them. They'll go to cocaine or methamphetamine. They'll try heroin. There's other drugs out there. Mushrooms, LSD, that don't show up in people's systems. All sorts of drugs that if you take them and you give yourself 48 hours to flush out, will never show up on a drug test. All sorts of legal or semi-legal, pseudo-legal alphabet soup of psychedelics out there, 25-MBOIM or whatever the hell they are. You're never going to ban all these things. And so long as people want to take drugs and you detect the one most often that is the least harmful, it goes without saying that any other alternative they pick, including alcohol, to avoid that drug test positive is going to be worse for them than if they had just allowed to use the natural cannabis. Drug testing causes public harm in this respect by incentivizing the use of more harmful substances. The other way drug testing causes public harm is in reducing the productivity, the output, the income level, the educational attainment that people otherwise would get had they not been busted by a drug test. It all has to do with what socioeconomic background you're in and what industry you're in, of course. Bill Gates and Steve Jobs, nobody really gave a shit whether they were smoking pot or dropping acid. They're middle-class white guys in the IT industry on the West Coast. Nobody really cares. But who could have been the next Bill Gates or Steve Jobs who might have grown up a black kid in Atlanta in an underprivileged neighborhood? Who might have been the next Steve Gates or Bill Jobs that grew up as on a native reservation? Who might have been the next Bill Gates or Steve Jobs that was in the Midwest and lost a scholarship or an opportunity because of a drug test? These public harms are immeasurable because we can't possibly know how much further people might have gone had the drug test not interfered with their life. But that is a public harm nonetheless. So I just hate these drug testing stories. And I hate these stories of K2 use, especially when we're seeing it in a legal state. And this is just to show that legalization by itself is not going to go far enough. I was saying this last week on one of the rants when the story of the Brooklyn pot zombies. There's 33 pot zombies in Brooklyn. Ah, run. Because they were all on K2 and they got a bad batch that made him kind of lethargic. And I said, because I got a lot of people saying, well, man, we just need to legalize pot. That'll end that. No, it won't. People aren't smoking K2 because they can't get a hold of some pot. They're smoking the K2 because they want to beat the drug test. Period. You know where they sell a lot of K2? They sell a lot of K2 at the convenience stores just outside of Army bases. And the head shops just outside of Army bases. They sell a lot of this stuff to athletes. Like to use it. Remember the story of Robert Kimdichie? Robert Kimdichie, that star player, I think he was LSU player, that jumped out of a second floor window because he was high on K2, allegedly. So athletes and military people, people who are drug tested. Oh, and of course, people on parole and probation. People on parole and probation. And it's just odd to me that even in the legal states, Oregon, Washington, Colorado, Alaska, if you're on parole or probation, they can keep you off the marijuana. They can keep drug testing you for marijuana in a legal state.
It all goes to show you that it's always something.
Yeah, that's true, Roseanne Rosanna Dana. It's always something. Well, it's 4:20 here in the Pacific time zone. We got to take a break with some more of this TJ's Chocolate Kush. We hope you have time and resources for an effective safety meeting. We'll be right back after this.
Every strain, every sale, every medical study. Keep it right here on the Cannabis Radio Network.
Dr. Dabber, hurry! Its temperature is shooting past 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. It's burning up.
I'm afraid for this little guy, it's just too late.
What caused the problem?
Only Dr. Dabber can maintain the perfect temperature for a smooth-tasting, slower burn. This standard vaporizer lost all of its health benefits, sending it up in smoke.
So you're telling me that most vapor pens burn so hot they produce smoke, not vapor?
Correct. Keep away from those standard vaporizer pens and turn to Dr. Dabber. Doctor's orders.
Less heat, more flavor.
This is Cannabis Facts from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. Supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. In 1937, the second most prescribed medicine, marijuana, was banned. It wasn't about marijuana. The paper, oil, and chemical industries lobbied to end hemp farming. No longer labor-intensive, an acre of hemp produced more quality paper than 4 acres of trees. Plastics and fibers could be produced from a plant. Hemp can even produce 10 times the energy of today's ethanol. As marijuana prohibition ends, many states now allow farmers to again grow hemp. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to process America's hemp crop at hempinc.com.
This is Dan Michaels from danmichaelsaudio.com, and you're listening to Radical Russ on cannabisradio.com.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
Pod 2.0.
It's not your father's Woodstock weed.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. 23 after the hour here, live from beautiful legal potland, Oregon. So excited about the upcoming election. It's been fun watching the Republican National Convention. I just don't know what country they live in, though. They kept talking about a country where everybody's terrified and the world's coming to an end. Nobody fears us anymore. Our military is shit. What country is this they're talking about? I love those. But some of my favorite stuff at the convention was the, oh, we need to rebuild our military. Our military is decimated. Our military is weak. Folks, do you know who, by number of combat planes, has the number one Air Force in the world? Well, it's the United States. We have the number one Air Force in the world, about 6,000 combat planes. You know who has the number two Air Force in the world? The United States Army has about 5,500 combat planes. You know who has the number three Air Force in the world? The U.S. Navy and Marines, with about 4,500 combat aircraft. Yeah, the United States has the top three air forces in the world. And if you do a pie chart of the top 10 air forces, we're half the pie. We have as much air force as the next seven in the top 10 combined. And all but two of them are our allies. It's like, what is this America that's like so weak that has the three top air forces in the world. And as far as military expenditures, just overall military expenditure, the United States spends more on our military than the next 11 countries combined. And again, only two of those, Russia and China, are not our allies. Where is this America? We need to make our military stronger than that. Now, look, I'm not a pacifist by any stretch of the imagination. I see the need for military and war when necessary, but couldn't we just be twice as strong as everyone else? Wouldn't that be enough? Could we sell off a few planes and maybe build a school here and there? Maybe. Hell, sell off an aircraft carrier and take care of our veterans. Let's take care of the guys who fought the last few wars before we start the next one. Oh, my God. So it floors me watching that convention. The other thing that was fun to watch in the convention was Melania Trump's speech. Well, first of all, Donald Trump's entrance, WWE, got the fog, and he enters. Okay, so first, before Donald comes up, they were playing a Van Morrison song, Brown Eyed Girl, right? Melania Trump, she's brown eyes, right? Makes me wonder if they got that licensed from Van Morrison. But then again, he might be so drunk he didn't even notice. But then Trump comes in to Queen's We Are the Champions. And I thought, first of all, if you're going to have Donald Trump come into a Queen song, shouldn't it be I'm Going Slightly Mad? Shouldn't it be something like that? And then Ian Carmel on Twitter, he had the great response to that. It's like, sure, Donald, come in to the song written by a bisexual immigrant. Like, yeah, good point, Ian. Very good point. So it's been fun watching this Republican convention because there's not going to be a mention of weed. I can't watch it to find when they're going to talk about weed at any time. That's not going to happen. So it was at least entertaining. Let me get back to some marijuana facts and figures here, because as we all know, we've got 5 states going for marijuana legalization. We got 4 going for medical. We got Florida, Missouri, Arkansas, Montana, and North Dakota. So we got 5 that'd be going for medical. And you might be saying, wait a minute, doesn't Montana already have medical? Yes, but I'm going to call Montana a medical marijuana vote because they got 2 initiatives that could likely make the ballot. One of them expands their medical marijuana back to having dispensaries and pretty, open patient registry and so on. Returns them back to where they were before their legislature screwed them over. It's funny to me because living in the Pacific Northwest, I have to hear all these people in Washington and Colorado complaining about how legalization has destroyed medical marijuana. Oh, it's destroyed medical. In Oregon, we can only grow 48 plants out in the country. In Washington, we can only have triple what anybody else can have. Meanwhile, Montana, they're the ones that really got screwed. Montana went from having 30,000 patient registry to under 13,000. They went from having over 3,000 providers to under 300. They got a new law that restricts them to 3 patients per caregiver. And any doctor that recommends more than 25 times a year gets audited by the medical board. They're the ones that got screwed over. Let's give some attention to Montana, okay? So Montana's got this initiative that could return them, basically undo all that stuff. Return them back to being a legit Western medical marijuana state with dispensaries and everything. But they got another initiative that could prohibit marijuana altogether. They could completely get rid of medical marijuana. So Montana, if the first one wins and the second one fails, could go back to having a great medical marijuana program. If the first one fails and the second one wins, could go to having no medical marijuana program. If both fail, they would stay where they are, which is this kind of, tough, 3-patient limited medical marijuana program. If both win, it comes down to which one gets more votes. So, I mean, Montana's going to be a place to look at. And in all these places, they need to raise money. Now, a lion's share of the marijuana money is going to go to California. And I've been worried. Like, how much money do we have to go around when we're talking about 10 different states where there could be significant marijuana reform on the ballot? and still a Hail Mary chance in Michigan. So are there going to be enough philanthropic donors to cover all the bases, especially in some of these littler states like in Arkansas or Montana or North Dakota, where just what is relatively a small donation for a place like California could do a ton of good in a place like North Dakota? Well, we have some preliminary numbers here. There's a story coming out of Arkansas Online from the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, where Arkansans for Compassionate Care, the Medical Marijuana Committee, raised a $12,500 donation from New Approach PAC. Now, New Approach PAC is mostly the estate of the late Peter Lewis, the guy who gave millions and millions to marijuana legalization and medical all across the country. So they got a $12,500 donation. That means they raised, and they also raised another about $4,000. They got over $16,000 last month. And over the long haul for their whole campaign so far, they've raised $142,000. So this is great. New Approach PAC, that doubles their commitment so far to $25,000 that they've committed to Arkansas. Now compare that, New Approach PAC, compare their contributions of, what is it now, $750,000 in California? But again, Arkansas, it's a lot cheaper to get things done in Arkansas. We've also got some numbers coming out of Arizona. And this is from an op-ed written by an opponent. And it's talking about the campaign to regulate marijuana like alcohol. That's a MPP offshoot. And they've raised $2.2 million in Arizona. And the woman who writes this op-ed, her name is Lori Roberts. I believe she identifies as female. Got to be careful now, right? I can't just say, oh, her name's Lori, L-A-U-R-I-E. She must be female. Can't make that assumption anymore, can we? Anyway, getting off the track. She opens by saying the grassroots campaign to legalize weed in Arizona is more grass than roots. And the whole point here is to try to say it's these big out-of-state money billionaires that are coming in to legalize weed and they're just doing it to make money. She goes on here to say that 2% of the $2.2 million comes from people and businesses that appear to have no connection to the marijuana industry. No one from the construction or tourism business has contributed, not so much as a single bed and breakfast, but Marijuana Policy Project is there. They've sunk in $840,000 of the $2.2 million. And then they point out how a lot of these other dispensaries, or a lot of these other contributors in the five and six figure range, are dispensaries, hydroponic supply, dispensary. And some other heavy hitters, attorneys and managers and consultants from the industry. And so the point she tries to make here, it's a scare piece to try to say, see, it's all out-of-state interest trying to make big money. This isn't what Arizonans really want. And then she points out that the opposition group is Arizonans for Responsible Drug Policies. They've raised $638,000. And she points out how all of these people are grassroots people. They're the Arizona Chamber of Commerce and the microchip people and U-Haul and blah, blah, blah. Also notes that the Arizona Wine and Spirit Wholesalers Association is against it. Gee, I wonder why. But this is a specious argument to make. Almost every ballot initiative that intends to change the status quo has to do so through raising out-of-state money. If you look at any issue out there, very rarely is it all grassroots. And yes, dispensaries are contributing to this, and yes, marijuana policy is contributing to this, because yes, they want to see a legal marijuana industry they can take part in which they pay taxes to the state and create jobs, an economic opportunity for hundreds, if not thousands, of people in the state of Arizona. This is a, you know, trying to scare people with the out-of-state money thing only works if the people aren't voting for that, right? I mean, this seems to be a popular thing that the people of Arizona want. When you take polls and you ask them, majorities keep coming back saying they want to see legalization. What difference does it make? Who's paying for that and why? From my perspective, if I'm a pot smoker in the state of Arizona, my main concern is not ending up in pink underwear in Sheriff Joe's jail. So, what could happen so that that is an impossibility? Why? One of two things. Number one, I never smoke or possess pot in Arizona. So let's talk about a realistic solution. Number two, make it legal. Now, do I care that Green Tidings Dispensary or whoever the hell then gets a recreational pot license and makes a whole bunch of money? Am I going to be sitting there going, doggone it, a bunch of people made money in the pot market. I'd rather go to jail again. Why do I care who's getting rich? What difference does it make to me? I'm not into legalizing marijuana for the business angle. I'm into it for the civil rights angle. I'm into it for the liberty angle of not having police interrupt my day because of my choice of herbal remedy. But nice try. Thanks for the numbers. We'll be right back with some more numbers for New Zealand when we return.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
We have your smoking section right here. This is the Cannabis Radio Network.
The cannabis industry is growing. Business is booming. And as new opportunities arise in newly legalized states, each market is getting more competitive. Today, it takes more than just being a good grower. Do you have the resources to market and handle this ever-changing business landscape? Let Canna Management Corporation help you grow your canna business with our vast resources and experience to make your business a fully functional service company. Financial management, HR, sales, marketing, efficiency, and more. CMC has the experience and the expertise to improve your business and help you better meet the demands of your clients and customers. Call Canna Management Corporation and let our team get you ready to grow. 415-269-8015. That's 415-269-8015. Or visit canna-management.com.
We love the earth.
I'm Radical Russ Belville, inviting you to join me every weekday on CannabisRadio.com for the Russ Belville Show. It's the NPR of POT. We bring you the latest marijuana headlines, cannabis analysis, drug war data, activist interviews, radical rants, and your live calls. Join me every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, live only on CannabisRadio.com.
The Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com, the National Wildlife Refuge for Marijuana Unicorns.
Don't want to spend money on a night out, but don't know what to do other than watching TV or playing video games? Consider playing guitar, bass, banjo, or mandolin. The instrument will give you hours of entertainment with friends with minimal expense. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension, downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street A, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Pod 2.0.
It's not your father's Woodstock weed.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Winding things up here for the last segment of the day. Remember when the DEA said they were going to give us a decision on marijuana rescheduling? Remember? I said by the end of June, they'd tell us whether or not they were going to remove marijuana from Schedule 1 of the Controlled Substances Act and put it down perhaps in Schedule 2, maybe Schedule 3, who knows. And I'm looking at my calendar, and I kind of noticed that it's after July, or it's after June 30th. And I was on vacation, but I don't recall them saying anything. And turns out that I didn't miss anything. The DEA hasn't made a decision. The DEA had a self-imposed deadline of, quote, the first half of 2016, but that ended on June 30th. So lately, the DEA says the DEA is currently in the process of evaluating a number of other citizen petitions regarding the scheduling of marijuana and is, quote, not bound by any date, end quote, to announce its determination. That's their public affairs decision division says that. They say they will come up with a decision sometime before the end of the year. So this also comes from the senators, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand and some other legislators, including Colorado's Jared Polis, Representative Jared Polis, ask the DEA to take immediate action to remove cannabis and tetrahydrocannabinols from Schedule 1. Now, there's a lot of controversy over what this would mean. For one, on the good side, moving from Schedule 1 to Schedule 2 gives the federal government's mark of approval that marijuana, cannabis, cannabinols have medical value. That's the only difference between a Schedule 1 and a Schedule 2 drug, by the way. Schedule 1 and Schedule 2 drugs are incredibly illegal, but a Schedule 2 drug has medical use. See, the categories for Schedule 1 are as it has a high potential for abuse. That's the same for Schedule 2. It has it is dangerous to use, and that's the same for Schedule 2. But Schedule 1 says it has no accepted medical use. Schedule 2 says it does. Schedule 1 is LSD, heroin, and marijuana. Schedule 2 is cocaine, methamphetamine, and OxyContin. They're all dangerous drugs, according to the government, but the latter three have medical use. So the good side of this, if you put marijuana in Schedule 2, it is now a prescribable drug in all 50 states. Not often. It's not like your doctor is writing out a ton of scripts for cocaine or methamphetamine, although Adderall is methamphetamine, Desoxin is methamphetamine. They do get prescribed. It also means that Schedule 2 might open up some research into marijuana, into whole plant marijuana. But there's some problems about this. It is possible and quite easy for the government to move THC, CBD, THCA, THCV, all these different alphabet soup of cannabinoids. It's very easy to move the cannabinoids from Schedule 1 to Schedule 2. They can't really move whole plant cannabis that way. It's not a clearly defined thing. And you're not going to see doctors or pharmacists want to get involved with the prescription of just herb. It's really something that belongs off of the Controlled Substances Act and into the world of nutraceuticals and supplements than the world of medicine and scheduling. And there's some fear that moving it to Schedule 2 could cause ripples in the existing states, especially the more liberal Western medical marijuana states that allow for the use of whole plant marijuana and for people to be able to buy it and grow it themselves. When suddenly that's a Schedule 2 substance, now there are rules that have to be followed as far as how it's dispensed. You have to be a pharmacist and you have to have pharmaceutical controls. Marijuana goes from being just some plant that we're not paying attention to because it's completely illegal to being something like OxyContin that we need to keep strict track of and have safes and lock it down. And we've done that a lot with marijuana, so it might not be too hard of a transition, but it's going to change a lot of how we view and a lot of how these state regulations work with respect to dispensaries. That's the fear. Now, it would be tough to oppose rescheduling to Schedule 2 or Schedule 3, even though it would seem that when it comes to that rescheduling, it's really just turning medical marijuana over to the pharmaceutical industry. because the things that get prescribed and sold and paid for by insurance aren't going to be raw plants. They're going to be THC CBD pills, THC CBD sprays, THC CBD tinctures, and so on. And that's going to make a lot of money for GW Pharmaceuticals and whoever else comes up with these preparations. It's not surprising to me because it's something I've argued for years. For years, I've talked about the Box Canyon theory and how if you continue to fight only for medical marijuana, your marijuana is going to become medical only. And that's the direction I see this going in a rescheduling world. If we reschedule to Schedule 2, I see medical marijuana becoming a pharmaceuticalized thing. And I see governments and the public increasingly go, well, wait, if you're really a medical marijuana patient, why won't you use the medical versions of marijuana that are, you know, strictly dosed and controlled and accurately measured for consistent dosage time after time after time, paid for by Obamacare, whatever insurance you might be on? It'll increasingly be a situation where people that want to use the natural herb are all lumped together in that recreational, habitual, doing it to get high category. The next fight for medical marijuana is going to be the fight for these patients to insist on whole plant medication. And increasingly, as marijuana becomes more pharmaceuticalized, the only place whole plant can go is the recreational market. That's the only place it's going to really belong. And people that want to use whole plant, it's not going to matter whether you're medical or recreational, because you're all going to be in this, we're all going to be in the same market. Now, I would approve of maintaining medical cannabis registries, medical recommendations, so that people that want to use medical cannabis can do so tax-free. I disagree with the Adult Use of Marijuana Act putting a tax on all cannabis that even medical consumers have to use. I don't think medical use should be taxed. I do think getting your tax-free certificate should involve a little more than just saying you're using it for medical purposes. In an ideal world, there'd be such low taxes on marijuana, it wouldn't even matter whether or not you're a medical user. We'd be down to $10 an ounce, and you could get plenty even at that cost. That's a few years away, I'm afraid. So we will keep our eyes on the DEA here because I really don't anticipate descheduling. I don't see them going that far that fast. I see it going to rescheduling. I see it going to Schedule 2. I see there being an upheaval in the whole medical marijuana world. And it won't be such an upheaval in the East Coast. These East Coast medical marijuana states that have already set, you know, no home grow and you have to get your stuff from a dispensary, that's just going to be a flick of a switch for them to switch over from plant to pill, spray, inhaler, tincture, all of that. And the last three states, they don't even have to switch over. They're already, you know, New York, Minnesota, Pennsylvania, they're already no plant states. You can only get preparations. They don't even have to switch over. They just have to wait for the next legalized Schedule 2 pharmaceutical to come through and stock it on their shelves. It's us out here in the West that are going to be screaming and hollering about whole plant. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens, and we'll keep you posted. Let's go to one other story, taking us way across the ocean to the other side of the world, over to New Zealand, where stuff.co.nz, NZ for my American listeners, has a story up about how the government could make $150 million a year from taxing cannabis. This comes from an informal treasury report to the government of New Zealand. It would ease pressure on New Zealand's courts and generate money for the government. These are obtained under the Official Information Act, and it was an internal treasury forum. The documents reveal the government spends about $400 million annually enforcing cannabis prohibition, whereas decriminalization would generate $150 million annually from taxing cannabis. So it's not just that you'd make $150 million, you'd also save $400 million in prohibition enforcement. Although, I don't think that's entirely fair. Once you legalize cannabis, there are now regulations to enforce for it, and that will cause some cost but it's going to be far less than the $400 million. And the report also says it would ease pressure on the justice sector. See, New Zealand has a problem kind of like we have in America, where white folks and black folks in America smoke pot at about the same rates, but of course the black folks are four times more likely to get busted for it. Well, in New Zealand, their population is white and Maori. I think you pronounce it Maori. Pacific Island race, Maori. And Maori make up 14.5% of the population in New Zealand, about one out of seven. But they receive 43% of the convictions for cannabis use. So they're getting busted at, what is that, three times the rate? 14 times three is, yeah, ding, ding, near nailed it. Three times the rate of their representation in the population. And in their discussions, in this informal Treasury memo here in New Zealand, they refer to Denmark, Germany, Portugal, parts of Australia, and the United States that have decriminalized cannabis and, quote, don't seem to have increased drug use, end quote. So, good news for New Zealand there. And let's hope they start to see the application of marijuana legalization, cannabis legalization there, as something that could be beneficial for them on a financial basis. However, I do have to keep warning us, keep warning the listeners, keep warning the reformers, that we've got to be careful in how we present the monetary savings or the monetary benefit of legalization. A lot of this benefit in taxing cannabis comes from taxing cannabis by price. When they say, you know, it's going to be a 10% tax or 15% tax. Well, problem with that is 10% of a $300 ounce is 30 bucks. 10% of a $10 ounce is a buck. It then sets up this incentive for the government to want to keep the price of marijuana high so they keep getting in that tax revenue. Because their only other alternative is to create more marijuana smokers smoking more often to keep that tax revenue going in. And that can't be a government message. Smoke more pot. Although, who knows, might make us stop shooting each other so much. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll close up shop here from beautiful legal Potland, Oregon. Thanks for joining us. We're back right after this.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Earn your PhD in THC monetization with CannabisRadio.com. Don't be late.
The next generation of vaporizers has arrived. Vuber vaporizers are blazing the way with unparalleled technology for oil, concentrate, or dry flower pens. Providing unsurpassed customer service and expert craftsmanship, Vuber vaporizers use cutting-edge technology, providing a power-packed, smoother vapor with a lifetime guarantee. Experience vaporizing the way it was meant to be, the Vuber way.
Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals, or at least they pay me to say that. A public service message from CannabisRadio.com and the Russ Belville Show.
With over 6 years of experience in the industry, New Era CPAs is one of the nation's leading cannabis accounting firms, helping hundreds of growers, dispensaries, and ancillary companies with their tax, legal, and business strategies. New Era CPAs offices cover the West Coast from Seattle to San Diego, and their skilled team is always available to help you take your business to the next level. Visit NewEraCPAs.com for more info and set up a consultation. Welcome to the New Era.
Warning, hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. or at least they pay me to say that. This is Dan Michaels from danmichaelsaudio.com, and you're listening to Radical Russ on cannabisradio.com.
All right, welcome back, everyone. 5 minutes till the top of the hour. And we're just winding things up here on Cannabis Radio. Want to thank everybody for joining us and letting you know we got a few events coming up in August. First weekend of August, I'll be here in Portland for the Indo Expo, and we'll have the full 20 by 30 Cannabis Radio booth set up too. We're going to be huge, folks. So if you can make it to Indo Expo in Portland, you will definitely be impressed. Then make sure you check out our Boise Hemp Fest coverage coming the second weekend of August. I just booked the rental car for that trip, and maybe I'll be carpooling with a few other activists there. We'll see. Then we've got the third weekend of August, of course, the 25th annual Seattle Hemp Fest. I'll be speaking all 3 days, and I just booked the train ride to Seattle for that one. Then in September, there's a couple of gigs going on in September. Let me click ahead and find those. The first week of September is Anchorage Weed Week, or Alaska Weed Week. And I may be up there in Anchorage all week long emceeing the event. We're still working on the negotiation for that. That's right after Labor Day. And then the following weekend, the weekend of the 17th and 18th, is the Boston Freedom Rally. And I just booked the flight to Boston on JetBlue, so we'll be out there. And I don't know what year of the Freedom Rally it is, 29, 28, something like that. But it's out there on the Boston Common, 2 days, and just a wonderful group of East Coast marijuana legalizers. And there'll be plenty more events coming up in October and November. We'll keep posted on all that. Also, the RadicalRust.com site is still down, still working on the transfer and getting new servers and designers and all that kind of stuff. But once it's back up, we'll put the full travel schedule and event schedule up there for you as well. Plus, we got the new order of pins coming for any of you former 420 Radio VIPs who are now Russ Belville Show VIPs. And those who have emailed me previously that you didn't get your pins, they're on the way. As soon as they make it here, they're on their way to you. That's all the time we got for today. Join us tomorrow, back with more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. For everyone here at CannabisRadio.com, I'm Radical Russ, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers!
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it.